Hello and welcome to the Unnamed Automotive Podcast. My name is Sammy Hajj Assad, and with me, as always, is my good friend and fellow automotive journalist, Benjamin Hunting. Say hi to the people, Ben.
Greetings, human listeners.
Greetings to everyone. If this is the first time you're listening to our podcast, thank you for trying something new. I will reiterate, Ben and I are a pair of automotive journalists, but more important than that, we're really good friends. Right, Ben?
Affirmative.
Right, Ben?
Affirmative X2.
Good friends really like to back each other up on things like that. So whenever I say, right, Ben, Ben can always be found saying, right, Sammy.
One might also argue that good friends will visit their other friends in the city that they live in during the course of their friendship.
Yes, occasionally. I'm coming. That is the voice of my good friend and fellow automotive journalist, Benjamin Hunting. You can find his work all over the internet. Isn't that right?
That is correct.
Just tell them.
I'm really holding out on you today with these answers. Sure. If you want to read me instead of listen to me, you can find my words at Motor Trend, at Car and Driver, and at Inside Hook.
Motor Trend, Car and Driver, and Inside Hook. And you can find my work at Autotrader.ca, Driving.ca, Nouveau Magazine, and Electric Autonomy Canada.
Sammy, is Nouveau Magazine spelled how I think it's spelled, or is it spelled how another way is spelled?
It's spelled as primarily as you can think, N-U-V-O Magazine. Yes,
that's right. I remember writing that on tests as a child and passing that class.
Yes, of course. Ben, we've got cars to talk about this week. Now, I didn't test drive anything, but you got to test drive a car with basically two powertrains, so it's like you've got one to talk about for each of us, right?
Sammy, I think I've driven this car before. Is that possible?
Oh, okay.
But like
so
years
should we just
ago,
close the podcast now?
No, because the thing about this car, which I'll tell you, was the Volvo V60 Recharge T8 Polestar Engineered. That's, I think, the full name of the car.
Volvo, I think they should put the engineering company at the very beginning of all cars.
Volvo has been building Polestar wagons for, I think, 6 or 7 years now, maybe a little bit longer. And before it was a company that made electric vehicles, Polestar was kind of like their in-house tuning center, I guess. And the evolution of these cars has been quite interesting because they've done a lot of different things. They had, I think it started out with just a turbo four, not a turbo five, but a turbo four engine. And then I think they went to the weird supercharged turbocharged engine, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think so.
And now with adding recharge into the equation, it is a plug-in hybrid. But some elements have stayed the same. They did make sedans. They've made less of them from what I remember. The wagon has always been kind of the focal point. But the one thing that's carried over on all of these cars is a manually adjustable Ohlins suspension system.
You are in love with this suspension system, as far as I understand.
I am on record as saying a manual suspension system in a manually adjustable suspension system in a car that costs $70,000 and is aimed at luxury buyers is perhaps the worst idea you could have for any suspension system.
Now, by manually, you mean it's not like a button that you press to change. It is a physical knob or like something you have to find underneath the hood. And
that's for the front end. So you actually have to pull a lever that pops the hood, and then you have to throw the hood up to the heavens. And it's really hard to do that while you're driving. Let me say, like, it's
you pull over at the side of the road because you're like, this road's going to be bumpy. I should change the suspension.
I found it challenging. I had one hand on the wheel. I'm leaning out the window. The hood is flopping everywhere. I cracked the windshield. It was a rough time. Once you do that, though, there's two little knobs. Anyone who's ever adjusted a suspension for like rebound or whatnot is familiar with how this works, where you have, in some cases, it's a little needle and you put a knob onto it that allows you to turn the needle. In Volvo's case, they have a knob that's built in. You twist it one direction for it to go stiff. You twist it another direction for it to go less stiff. And I believe it has 20 different settings.
Less stiff, not soft.
Sammy, I'm trying to avoid the use of the word soft because we've had some complaints from listeners about it. So I'm going back to less stiff. It offends fewer people. In any case, there's 20 different detents in the twist. So you'll feel little bumps while you're twisting it. I don't know who's counting to 20 because there's literally no markings. I mean, there's markings kind of around it, but they don't mean anything and they're not helpful. It says like Ohlins and suspension and it tells you which side's hard and which side is less hard. but yeah. You have to keep track in your mind. If you look at it, like if you were
to, so you have to start every time. You have to crank it to one end, and then 100%. You have to say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
It's true of almost every manually adjustable suspension. You can sometimes you'll have a marking on top of the knob that if you put it on the same way every time, you'll know how far you've twisted it. Mm-hmm. Not all systems have that. The Volvo one is just like, it's just a gold knob, right? You can't really tell. Maybe if you have better eyesight than I do. So yeah, you have to zero it out.
You don't have to use a wrench for this. You turn it with your hands?
Yes. But nice. In terms of tools, once you're done with the front, you actually have to jack up the rear of the car.
Again, very easy to do when you see the road ahead and you decide.
You can hang out the tailgate and hit a bump and hope for the best. Like you're not going to lose your arm in that brief millisecond where the suspension drops enough for you to reach in and just like frantically twist and count at the same time. I did not adjust the rear because it's winter time. It's cold. There's snow. And that sucks. Like, I'm just not going to do that. I'm not going to. Anyway.
Okay.
I did adjust the front. I went full stiff and then full not so stiff.
Yes.
The difference between them is not that great.
Oh, no.
It's not.
What do you mean by that?
I feel like with the suspension set to full hard, it was still quite drivable as a car. And with the, in terms of comfort, with the suspension set to full not so stiff, it was pretty decent as a handler. And I don't really know what situation, I guess, if you really wanted to tinker around with this car, if you're the kind of person who buys a luxury car, but also wants that luxury car to put you to work, then maybe you're into this. Everyone else with an Audi, BMW, or Mercedes is just going to push a button on a touchscreen and access their suspension settings and then probably save them as to how they like them in a certain drive mode. Uh-huh. With Volvo, the only way you can save the suspension settings is by taking, a notebook. And then counting some clicks and then testing it out and then stopping the car, getting out, jacking up the rear, putting it one click forward and then driving it to see if that's better. And then you repeat that 20 times.
That sounds insane.
Yeah. This is my second biggest complaint about the car. I realize I'm kind of harping on this, but I think it's ridiculous to have this system. Either just have it a single setting suspension that works well in all situations because almost no one is taking this car to a track. Or make it computer controlled like the 99.9% other cars on the market at this price point.
Okay.
I can't even think of it. Is there any other car in the market with a manually adjustable suspension, period?
Not at all.
Is there like a Lamborghini Aventador that has like comes with a mechanic who adjusts the suspension for you?
No, I don't think so.
Because you would know because you've driven literally a dozen different types of Aventador in the past 2 years. So
yeah, no, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't know how anybody did. Okay. So first of all, I do know that you check out, you adjusted these systems, or at least the one under the hood.
The one wasn't too lazy to adjust. Yeah.
And are you paying it? Are you in touch with the Volvo Polestar community? Are people changing these things every time they go out?
It's kind of hard to tell because, I mean, obviously not every time they go out because I don't think anyone jacks up their car every time they leave the house.
Yeah.
But it's hard to tell when you look online for information like that because the people who don't do it don't post about it. They don't say, I'm just letting you know I haven't touched the suspension settings. no one in a Volvo community forum is going to say that. It's all full of the people who are like, well, I set it to 8 in the front and 16 in the rear in the springtime. And then in the summer, I switched to 14 front and 11 rear. You know, like there's those people.
Right.
And those people are not to be trusted. So like I can't definitively say what Volvo owners are doing. But they can't be doing that much because there's not a lot of Polestars out there.
You think so? I see a bunch. I feel like I see a bunch.
I mean, I don't think they're a huge seller. Not for any reason. I just, they're expensive and there are other choices that don't involve manual labor. So I think people tend to go for those. But if you want a wagon that has performance, you're pretty much out of luck. This is what you're buying, right?
Are you? I thought there are some Audi wagons out there, no?
Well, there's the RS6, which is like double this price.
Yeah.
So I don't think we can really count that. And
but you just said wagon. You didn't say anything about pricing.
Is there an AMG wagon right now? Is there an E-Class AMG wagon? I don't think so.
There might be one of those in-betweeners, those like half AMGs. They're not custom engines.
The fake ones? Yeah. I don't know if that counts. I mean, I guess it kind of does count.
I love it when we just arbitrarily decide what counts and what doesn't.
Look, if I don't have to jack the car up to change the suspension settings, is it even a wagon?
There is. Hold on. Wait a minute. What am I looking at here? What are these cars? There's an E-Class wagon.
Yeah, there is an E-Class wagon. I just don't think there's an AMG version right now.
And I also think the E-Class wagon is this weird, like, tank-looking vehicle.
Is it an A? There might make an AMG 55 version of that wagon, which is like the M line or whatever
you want to call it. They make an E63.
They do make an E63 for this generation.
And then they make something called an E450 all-terrain wagon.
Yeah, I'm not interested. So the
E63, you don't need to adjust the suspension on that.
The E63 is, again, RS6 in price, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
I'll refine my statement. If you want a reasonably priced performance wagon or a wagon at all, I mean, your options are limited. And I would say it's even a stretch. This car is $71,000 in the US and I think it's $81,000 in Canada. That's a lot of money. Not as much as you pay for, you know, performance SUVs at that point, I don't think, but it's still a lot of money. I'm going to get it out of my system. There's one other thing I really don't like about this car, and then I'm going to get into the things that I do like because there's more of those. The other thing I don't like about any Volvo is the infotainment system.
Yeah, I think we've touched on this before, especially after they went from, what was it called before, Inform or something? I can't remember what it was called before, but now it's a Google Automotive or Android Automotive OS powered system, and it's clumsy. Like, it's really not a fun experience to use.
And you hear the name Android in the name. I just said you hear the name Android in the name. You hear the word Android and you think, oh, it will allow me to use Android Auto. That is not true, my friends.
That is the least of its problems.
It only lets you use Apple CarPlay if you want to connect your phone. If you have an Android phone like mine, you're just doing it over Bluetooth. And that was problematic. I had lots of instances where it wouldn't connect or it wouldn't connect properly or it wouldn't play one app's music, but it would play another app's music. Just really frustrating stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's pretty bare bones as a system. You can download apps for it, but you have to log in with your Google account to do that. I'm not really interested in giving Google yet another way to monetize the data tracking.
How could you?
That it already does. I feel like it's a double whammy here too, because you know Volvo is going to be selling it as well. It's like, why not just open up your arm and attach an IV and just pull my blood directly from my body? Like, that's how it felt when I was confronted with this system. So,
how much data can they get from your blood? Just once, and that's it.
You're so optimistic. You don't know anything about my blood.
No, I don't know about your blood. Your blood is pretty unique, to be honest.
All this to say, if you want to get the most out of this infotainment system, you have to be into logging in. You have to be into the idea that you have to log into your car. You have
to be into it. There's people out there who's like, yo, do you have a car I can log into?
Yeah. So if you're that person, Volvo definitely has a car or 12 for you. But if you're a normal person who just wants their car to work and don't want to have to go through like elaborate, I guess, security protocols every time you need to adjust something in terms of your car's infotainment, It's frustrating. Bottom line, it's frustrating. I don't like it. It also doesn't look very good. It's very basic. The only part...
I think this car looks sharp.
I'm talking about the infotainment.
Oh, the infotainment system. Yeah, it looks like butt.
The infotainment system on the dash, like the center stack one sucks. The one in front of you for the gauge cluster is better.
Yeah.
Because it has mapping and stuff and it looks pretty good. But
Did you have any issues with it? Because I've had issues where it like just blanked out.
The issue I had with it is, in terms of functionality, there's really not a lot there for the gauge cluster. Like, you can pull up the trip meter, and you can pull up the, which shows you, like, your trip overall, and then your trip from your most recent fuel up or from your most recent startup, and that's it. There's nothing else. There's, like, really nothing else you can do in the gauge cluster, and that's a letdown. You know, there's the mapping, there's the trip thing, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It feels like, given how good it looks, you'd think that there'd be more you can do with it, right?
It's really limiting and frustrating and weird, and I don't get it. It's, you know, if you were going to implement Android Automotive OS because you could do cool things with it, then okay, maybe I'm more on board. But if you're just doing it because it's an affordable way for you to not have to develop your own infotainment system, that's less impressive to me.
Yeah, I agree.
So let's move on. Let's move on from beating up on this car, because touching on the thing you just said, I think it looks really good. It's a very attractive wagon.
And the interior is not bad either.
The interior is pretty decent. Yeah.
Given that you're, like we said, this is not on the scale of those AMGs, those like nearly $200,000 cars. I think they can get that expensive. Am I making that number up?
I think you're right. I think you can do something like that.
I think the interior is fairly clean and nice, a good place to be in.
It's got all the weird Volvo stuff. Like, you have the on switches, that weird twist on the center console.
Yeah.
And you turn it the same way on and the same way off, which can be a little strange. I know I was thinking about that, and I'm like, you know, when you push a button, you're doing the same thing too. Like, it's not like the button moves a different way to turn it off. But yeah. I guess that when we're so used to the key twist motion that when we twist it one way, we expect it to do one thing. Whereas in the Volvo, it does both things, on and off.
That's true. And then I think, what about this cargo space of this wagon? You've got
pretty
a lot of
decent.
That.
It's got like 60.5 cubic feet. That's more than you'd find in a Volkswagen Golf, which is that's the bar that I set for wagons and SUVs, because everyone underestimates how practical a compact hatch can really be.
Yes, that's fair. I was going to be like, well, I mean, those two cars are not in the same class, but that's okay.
So you're below, like RAV4 and CRV, you know?
But those are really mainstream vehicles. They're everywhere. They're the mass market vehicles.
Sure, but they're not as large, I don't think. I think this is a midsize wagon, and I think you would call a RAV4 a compact SUV.
Yeah. So, I do like this car. If they could change this infotainment system, I think I would probably fall for this car. What about the performance, though? Because this thing, as you mentioned in the name of it, says engineered by Polestar. I'm sure they did more than just put this annoying suspension system in the car.
Yeah.
This powertrain, is it updated in any way for the Polestar, engineered by Polestar?
So, as I mentioned, it is a plug-in hybrid.
Yes.
And that
is this a different Polestar now? Is it the electric Polestar?
Yeah, Sammy, you gotta keep up. Because there are multiple versions of the Polestar out there. I believe...
You turn your back for a second and suddenly the guys were making performance...
There's a new Polestar. I want to say it's the same engine, though. It's the same turbo supercharged one. Is that correct?
I don't know. I forgot. I don't know.
That is the one thing I didn't look up before getting on this.
I thought they've changed them all to these new turbocharged four cylinders. That twin charging system, I think, was like, it felt like a stopgap. Like, it only happened for a few years.
No, I think they used it for quite a while. It wasn't like it was bad, right?
But it seemed like they could get more out of this just a regular turbocharged four cylinder.
So it is a 2-liter four cylinder.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because it really relies on this is one of those cars where the plug-in part is not really there for fuel mileage. I got decent fuel mileage in it. With the battery completely empty, I got about 30 miles per gallon, mostly highway. That's decent for a car that weighs, are you ready, Sammy?
Tell me.
4,495 pounds.
Holy, one more time, 4,400?
495 pounds, yeah. So it's a 4,500 pound wagon. That's the same weight as my Jeep Grand Wagoneer, which is much larger and built entirely out of steel.
Okay. But I'm looking at this new car, though. They've made some pretty significant changes to the powertrain this year. It's got a bigger battery. It's got more horsepower. What's going on here?
The battery itself is really interesting because I believe that Polestar makes perhaps the longest range plug-in hybrid vehicles on the market outside of like that giant Land Rover, Range Rover plug-in, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have the number in front of me. I got about 35 miles per charge in not very cold, but like freezing or below freezing temperatures.
And they usually estimate about 41.
So that's pretty decent. Yeah. You're not really going to find another vehicle. I think the Prius Prime is like 40 or something like that.
Okay.
And I want to say that Land Rover is like 47 or 48. So given that this is a normal sized car with a giant sized battery, that's where Volvo poured the money into this vehicle.
Okay. And that means like that 4,500 pound curb weight is like reasonable.
It is and it isn't, because this is a car that has
got a big old battery,
but it has
a BOB,
455 horsepower. and 523 pound-feet of torque.
Woo!
That's a lot of power. But it does
have the biggest brakes I've ever seen.
It does. We'll get to the brakes. It does 0 to 60 in 4.3 seconds, though.
Holy moly. Okay.
That's not great.
Now we're talking.
That's
why?
Not...
I think that's great.
Okay. In the real world, sure. That's more than you'll ever need.
Yeah, that's where I live.
You don't live in the real world anymore. You moved to a town that can I tell people where you live?
Sure.
Sammy moved to Hamilton.
Hamilton, Ontario.
Not necessarily the real world.
No, a very scary world.
But the thing is, if you have 523 pound-feet of torque, your car should be quicker than that. And the reason it isn't is because you have that giant battery, that 4,500 pounds of car. This is
the
like
BLB, the big old battery.
This is the same weight as a Hellcat, basically.
Yeah, perfect.
But it doesn't have Hellcat levels of power.
But it's more efficient than a Hellcat.
It is much more efficient than a Hellcat. So with the battery, on roughly the same distance I traveled without the battery, like when the battery was empty, I got like 60 miles per gallon. Like if you take into account the amount of driving I did with the battery only, it can go up to 80 miles an hour pretty much on the battery alone, which is really good. And I had no, like, the power. Remember when I had that CX-90 a couple weeks ago and I had trouble going up?
It didn't do anything for you.
It had trouble going up hills on the battery. With this Volvo, I had no such issues. If I wanted, in order to kick in the gas engine, you really had to ask for it. You had to kick down hard with the accelerator when it was operating in what it calls pure mode. So I was impressed with that. The real acceleration, though, for this car isn't off the line. It's when you're above about 45, 50 miles an hour and you step on it, it is crazy. It gets very, very fast, very quickly. And you were mentioning the brakes before. The way you know how heavy this car is, I mean, obviously you look at that 4.3 seconds, 0 to 60, and you have an idea. But then try hauling it down from like 110 miles an hour.
And does it get squirmy?
With hybrid brakes. Yeah. No, it doesn't get squirmy. It just like doesn't really stop.
Oh.
If you're pushing hard and then it feels like you push past a certain point, just like every other regenerative braking system, and then it starts to stop, but not in a way that I would describe as there's not a lot of bite. And I think that personally, I feel that I want bite as an indicator that the brakes are functioning properly. That's what I look for when I'm driving a performance car.
Yeah, and I think I agree with you.
And this car doesn't have it. It didn't feel dangerous, but you will have to plan out your stops if you're driving extremely fast. It's not going to stop on a dime, and that's a function of just the regen brakes plus the size of the vehicle.
Okay.
Not the size, sorry, the weight of the vehicle.
The weight. That's unfortunate because I do like – I've had sometimes the more impressive things about these speedy, like, what do you call them, super sedans or super wagons is that not only are they super fast – they can brake and stop like a supercar. It's unbelievable sometimes.
I mean,
you've been in an RS6 or an M5, those brakes are unbelievable.
I agree, but those brakes also don't regen.
Yes.
The other thing is, I had an M5 brake fade on me on the front straight of a racetrack in Portugal.
Ooh.
And it was a little, it certainly got my attention. The way we were doing,
what do you mean by got your attention? You're about to crash.
Like, we were doing a lead follow lap with what is his name? Steve. He's a factory driver for BMW. He's a really great guy. I can't remember his last name right now. I feel bad about it. In any case, they had set up the pace car at the front of the event, and there may be three of us on the track at a time. And they would flash a light, I think, when they wanted us to start braking. And it would let you know when he was starting to brake. And I remember the light flashing, and I'm probably doing 130 or 140 miles an hour. And I hit the brakes, and like literally nothing happened. Foot to the floor.
Oh my God.
And fortunately, it's a long front straight before there's this sharp curve. So I start downshifting the car like crazy. And I'm pumping the brake, and I barely make it into the corner. And everyone watching, it doesn't look dramatic or anything, right? Like, because I'm not locking the brakes up. There's no smoke. It's just people watching going, wow, that guy's really confident about his corner entry speed. I assure you, I was not confident.
Many of these stories of you with other people having that experience watching you do something. I think there was a Genesis G70 event that happened the same thing.
What are you talking about?
Do you recall that? Or maybe it was a G80. Maybe I'm mistaken.
Where I pulled the handbrake turn in front of the Genesis PR staff. Yeah, I didn't know they were there.
And they must have looked at that guy like, wow, he must have been real confident about how good this car is.
That was an autocross, though. And I was trying to prove a point about the autocross time by sliding through the gates backwards at the end of the autocross.
There you go.
Don't do that. Anyone listening, don't do that. It proves a point, but not the point you want to make.
That's right. Okay, so we've got some pros and highlights and lowlights of this powertrain.
Yeah, and I want one more thing about the weight. So the suspension, even when it's set to full, not so stiff, it does a pretty decent job of handling the bulk of the car. I didn't really have any complaints in terms of handling. And when I was driving, the roads I was driving on were mostly clear, but I would occasionally encounter some snow. And the snow was almost always off to one side. So I would get into situations where you'd have one side with grip and one side that didn't have grip. And in those moments, the car did a really good job of doling out the all-wheel drive to figure out where it needed to put power. It never really felt like I was at risk at any point. And one interesting thing is launching this car hard, there was torque steer, which I was not expecting. Little bit of torque steer, but you feel it in the steering wheel. I think that's because the electric motor dumps power to the rear and the gas motor only dumps power to the front. I think. I'm not sure how that's set up. I think the gas might also send some power to the rear, but that's how the balance worked out when I was hitting the gas hard.
Okay, so you've got some pretty based on what I'm hearing from you, you have some pretty positive things about this vehicle to discuss. And then you also mentioned a few lowlights. Are those lowlights worth living with? Like, especially the infotainment system and the I wouldn't call them shoddy or shabby brakes, but the less than stellar
brakes? Yeah, less than stellar is a good way to put it. I really feel like the infotainment is a huge letdown. It really does feel like stepping back in time when you compare how good so many other systems are these days. So if you're the kind of person who doesn't really care about infotainment and is okay with driving a car that feels like it's from 5 years ago.
Or maybe you can just deal with that Apple CarPlay.
Yeah, maybe if you have an Apple device and you're not like me and you can ignore it, then maybe it's fine. It just doesn't feel special. And a car like this should feel special everywhere. The manually adjustable suspension, I honestly believe most people will never touch it and it'll stay at the factory settings, or they'll accidentally touch it one day and then show up at the dealer and be like, why does my car suck now? And they'll have to have a technician fix it for them. It's probably a non-issue for most people. For the people who are buying this kind of car, though, and who are enthusiasts, I think it will be a pain point.
Yeah. Yes.
So I do like the car overall.
Okay.
I would like it more if it was $10,000 cheaper.
I mean, we say that about every car we drive, don't we? Don't we believe that all cars are getting kind of expensive?
They're getting
expensive. Which I'll talk about in a minute when we start talking about our lightning round later today. But yes. What are we doing? I mean, you're not going to find a luxury car suddenly become cheaper than before. They need to find a new model that will slot below this, and then they'll sell it for $10,000. And of course, you're getting way less of a vehicle and all sorts of other things.
As we were discussing earlier, you can't really get a performance wagon at this price. Like, that's it. You know, you're not going to get anything else. So
right.
Volvo kind of owns this market, and they know that, and this is just how it is.
And you're not happy with that. A lot of people seem to be not happy with that, but if you are, let us know.
More power to you. The other positive thing about this, though, if we want to just completely ignore the performance side of the equation, as a plug-in hybrid, it's really good. The electric motor is great. It gets very realistic real-world mileage, and even in the cold. And if you live in a city, you could probably not touch the gas motor for a really long time and get all of your daily driving done, and then load it up with stuff and head out on the weekend and hammer on those brakes as hard as you want and find out what I was talking about. But yeah, I think from that perspective, it's very successful. I find it odd that the only recharge version of the V60 is the Polestar engineered. Like, you can't get a normal suspension, just kind of focused on efficiency version of the car anymore. In the States, you can still get a cross-country version of the V60, I think. Is that right, Sammy?
I believe so. I didn't check. I haven't checked recently. That sounds right.
Oh, remember earlier when you were getting an access denied issue on Volvo?
Yeah, are you getting that now too?
Yeah, I just went to check and see about their cars, and it's like,
are they getting owned right now?
I don't know, but their website is down. I think in Canada, this is the only version of the V60, okay. Period.
That's rough. That's really difficult. It's a really difficult thing to try to... Okay, you and me have we follow the industry. We know what's going on. We see a PHEV, and we can determine whether or not that this is meant to be a fuel saving technology or performance enhancing technology. Should we be marketing these things as performance enhancing technologies or fuel saving technologies, or should we ignore it altogether? Kind of the way the Polestar has. By offering one of the longest ranges, but also tons of performance, right? That's what they're doing here.
Was there a question in there?
Yeah. What do you think is the best approach to a PHEV?
I don't think there's a best one. I think that they're both valid, and you just have to kind of decide what represents your brand the best, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That would be kind of how. And it's weird because for Volvo, like, is that really what people think of Volvo? I guess that's how they feel.
Hmm.
But yeah, it is the only version in Canada, by the way.
Okay.
Back in 2023, mm-hmm. They had multiple V60s, but they 2024, it's just the T8.
Interesting. That changes things, right? Like that changes things significantly.
Well, they want you in an XC60.
Yeah, which is not the same car. Like it just isn't.
Moving on.
Yes.
You said something about lightning round.
Yeah, I have a bit of a lightning round to talk about. As you know, it's the New York Auto Show this week, and unlike other auto shows, this one actually takes place in the city it is described as.
You what know. Is that supposed to mean?
Don't you remember when the Geneva Auto Show happened in Qatar?
No, Sammy, because I'm not fancy enough to have gone to the Geneva Auto Show.
No, the New York Auto Show is really in New York, and some cars like. That happened. Like some cars showed up.
Some cars happened.
And they said, we're here, deal with it.
No, explain why that's interesting though, because there are car shows now where cars don't happen.
More cars don't happen.
You sometimes get
one or two and then that's it, right?
So car shows have shifted. What we mean by this is car shows used to be one of the main ways car companies would introduce new models to the world. Mm-hmm. And to the world, that means also to journalists. So sometimes the first time you would see a vehicle would be at an auto show on a stage. And then kind of what started happening was car companies would stage these offsite events during the week of the auto show. So like 3 or 4 days beforehand, you would be near New York City, but not quite in New York City. Or maybe you would be just across the river. And they would do a private unveiling of a vehicle, and then they would get all their media imprints before the show started. And they did that because it was a way for them to not have to share the spotlight with other car companies. But then, Sammy, what happened overall? Like, it just kind of seemed like the shift moved away from car companies wanting to entice the media to these shows to car companies wanting to focus on customers.
Right. You're saying that the it's become less media oriented and more consumer oriented.
Yeah. So the debuts aren't happening at the shows anymore. The debuts are happening well beforehand. The media doesn't really need to be there because they've already driven the cars, and car companies are focused more on getting potential customers into the cars over the course of the show.
And then in addition to that, from what I understand, the attendance records of these shows in terms of the consumer side of things have been really impressive. Since the pandemic, a lot of people seem to be going to these car shows, and that's kind of cool that there's still enthusiasm for the car show, right?
But you're saying that in New York, things are different.
Things are happening. There's cars that are showing off. One of the first ones that caught my attention is the 2025 Nissan Kicks. Now, as you know, the Kicks is a darling of the Unnamed Automotive Podcast, mainly because it started off as a very affordable, lightweight, compact crossover, one that used to be available with manual transmission. I don't think that's the case anymore, but allowed drivers to get into something without having to bust their budget wide open and get exploited for, I don't know, like loan rates or interest rates.
It was cheap. It was light. It was fun. I believe it weighed under 3,000 pounds, which is really crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I think at that time, like there was no sports car in the market that weighed under 3,000 pounds except for the Miata.
Yeah.
So you could get it. You could get a lightweight Kicks and kind of like show up beside a BRZ and be like, yeah, I'm lighter.
Now, this new model has a whole new look. Like it really looks very different. than before. I don't want to spend a lot of time describing it over the visual medium that is this. I mean, the audio medium that is this podcast. But it's got a big old like techie look grill. It's got this two-tone.
What's a techie looking grill to you? Is that like a grill that could fix your email problems?
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's okay. Got like it's got this grill that seems to have lights inside of it. That's
like a grill your grandmother would call and be like, "You need to come over and fix the internet."
And then it's got a two-tone, like a roof, a different colored roof compared to the rest of the body. And it looks really sharp and modern. And I think that's something that the current Kicks struggles with in terms of its design. Not an not a super attractive vehicle, while this looks way more modern and at least cool. In addition to that, though, Nissan is pointing out a couple of things that are coming to the Kicks that have raised my eyebrows significantly. For starters, there's more technology in the vehicle, including a 12.3-inch touchscreen.
It's not just the grill.
Yes, with wireless Android Auto and Apple CarPlay. And then you're getting, for the first time available on the Kicks, all-wheel drive and Nissan's safety suite called ProPilot Assist.
Now, I can't wait for the Kicks SER.
Now that I've heard all of these things... I got really concerned. This is a vehicle that I thought was supposed to be cheap and not Spartan, but like...
Sweet little Kicks. What have they done to you?
Now it sounds like it's going to be expensive, right?
I'm already planning for a future where I can't afford the Kicks. It's honestly grim, but I have to own up to it.
So a Kicks currently starts at $21,000, which is great. Which is such a good price. It's easily going to be going up by... 20%?
Now, I think you have
25%?
You have reason to be fearful, because if we look at crossovers and compact vehicles that are around that price point now, mm-hmm. I have one parked in my driveway today, and that's the Chevy Trax.
Yeah,
I believe starts right around 21.
Yeah. Another great price.
That is also front-wheel drive with no all-wheel drive available. If you look at the Maverick, the base Maverick pickup, which is comparable in size to the vehicles we're talking about,
yes.
It is also front-wheel drive and around that price. All-wheel drive, once you step into that realm, it really does jack things up. I mean, at least $2,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, that's too bad. That's not great. I mean, do you think there will not be a front-wheel drive Kicks? Or do you think we'll get a front-wheel drive Kicks that's kind of like...
I think it will come with front-wheel drive, and all-wheel drive will be offered.
But the front-wheel drive versions will be decontented.
Exactly. And will be. I don't know if they're going to be still as nice as we remember the Kicks being.
Yeah, that's sad. I can see... Look, we're obviously speculating, and yes, it's not fair. Like this is a great big secret, and they're going to keep this from us. Like, it's not like one of Sammy's Aventadors where we're going to have to fly to some exotic location to find out, is the base Kicks still good?
Yes.
Honestly, probably just head to a Nissan dealer within the next few weeks and find that out ourselves.
That's fair.
It's still something that, yeah, I mean, we don't want Unnamed Automotive Podcast icon to kind of fall from grace.
That's fair. And I'm mostly concerned because Nissan's been talking a big game about all this stuff. They have a new business plan, which I think is very important to discuss. The business plan highlight is to drive value and enhance competitiveness and profitability.
What was the old plan?
I thought was the old plan. I don't know. I think most automakers have that same plan of improving value, enhancing
competitiveness. Sounds like Nissan had some spies over at Toyota, and they saw Toyota's plan, and they're like, what have we been doing all these years?
And apparently they're going to launch 7 new vehicles in the U.S. over the next 3 years. So,
including an Xterra. I've heard they're talking about an Xterra, and they need it to be quote-unquote authentic.
I heard this. This was a name drop. I think somebody asked, like, what do you think of the Xterra? And they were like, it needs to be, if we're going to make it, it needs to be authentic.
You know what that means, Sammy?
It's not happening.
It means you'll only be able to buy it on Marketplace, and it will have 190,000 miles on it.
Oh, and it'll be so expensive. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it'll be like 3 times the cost.
Every Nissan in the world has the worst resale value except for
Xterra.
Yeah, or a like body on frame Pathfinder.
Yeah, those are the two ones that you just get. Well, I don't know. The one that I want, the Pathfinder that I wanted, which is like the 2000 and up, where it got the good version of the VQ.
Yeah.
That was it was a unibody, I believe, but it had like, I think Nissan called it an extended frame.
Yeah.
So it was part unibody and part body on frame and all just great. That's in my opinion. That's the first generation QX4.
QX4, I love that thing. Yeah. Okay.
I saw a really nice QX4. Okay, first of all, every QX4 I see is really nice because I see like two a year. But this one was that champagne green that they had. Pretty nice. I'm going to say that was a killer color scheme. I would not pay more for a QX4, but I would pay for a QX4, if that makes sense.
In addition to all of this, Mercedes-Benz unveiled an updated version of the G-Class. Now, before you get excited, nothing really exciting like happened.
Let me make some predictions.
Yeah.
Fake hybrid system?
Yeah, kind of. They said that electrified engines improve responsiveness and greater comfort. That was the headline. And then you read the next line, it says it's a mild hybrid system with a six-cylinder turbocharged engine. And you're like, this isn't new. This isn't interesting.
It's like 48 volt, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then additionally, there's a new A-pillar that's improved aerodynamics and noise levels.
So, like, I'm going to be honest with you. It would be really hard to make the G-Class worse aerodynamically.
Aerodynamically, yeah.
So I would think that for every angle, for every degree of angle you could move that upright A-pillar at the front, you'd probably pick up like 5 miles per gallon.
Yeah. Absolutely. Another thing that happened recently at the New York Auto Show was, well, we were talking about performance brands, and one automaker that is lacking a performance brand is currently Genesis, and now they've got one. They've got one coming called Magma.
Ooh, the floor is lava, Sammy.
The floor is lava, as are these the paint scheme on these cars that they've unveiled. All of this really hyper-orange kind of color. We saw the G60 Magma, and I think it's a G70 Magma.
No, there's no G70.
Or is it G80?
They had a
G80. Yes, a G80.
And they had some other one that was announced. But the thing is, we're getting the G60 Magma, but the G80 Magma is only going to the Middle East.
That's because it's not going to be power. It's not going to be an electric vehicle, I suppose.
I assume it's going to be like they're breaking the V8 out. If they're going to the Middle East, you know that means V8s.
Yeah. But while Genesis was doing all of this, they showed off a new concept car that honestly just looks like the Kia EV6, but with the EV9 with a Genesis badge, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it looks great.
It looks cool. But yeah.
Like the silhouette is very EV9.
Genesis Neolun concept.
I want to say I'm kudos to Genesis for not just picking a random letter of the alphabet for their performance version, because every other car company has done that now, including Hyundai, the corporate mothership with N. Mm-hmm. And they're all essentially meaningless. I mean, Cadillac's V, I guess, stands for velocity. BMW M is motorsport. But once you get past that, like, there's only so many consonants and vowels you could realistically attach. So choosing Magma, I think, makes a statement, even if this is a car company that doesn't have names for any of its cars and just has letters. So they're approaching it from like the anti-infinity perspective.
That's fair, yes. Another vehicle that showed up was the... Oh, you're going to love this. This is great.
I'm already loving it.
It's the hardcore... Did you know that Land Rover wants to make a hardcore version of the Defender?
How can it be more hardcore
than the V8 version that's already out there? Yeah, they just decided that's the way it's going to be.
Wait, let me guess. 48-volt electrification. No,
maybe. But it's going to use a twin-turbo V8 from our friends over at BMW, so it's not even their own
V8. That's pretty crazy.
Yes. It's got a great new name. It's the Defender Octa, OCTA.
Like Defender Octa UFC edition?
Yeah, the Octagon, yes.
I don't get it. Doesn't Land Rover already have a high performance division called SVR?
Well, we thought that this was going to be called a Defender SVR or SVX. And they decided, we thought that maybe they shouldn't name it. They thought you guys were all too close, and Octa is the new performance sub.
You know what happened is they were going to call it the Magma.
Yeah, that's what happened.
And they got punked.
No!
They got punked by Genesis. Last night. Yeah. And to change it, they had to hand make a bunch of badges overnight in a hotel room and stick them onto them. Why does that Octa badge look so Etsy?
So the there's a bunch of like diamond shapes in this vehicle. That's their thing. They want to make diamonds their thing.
Dana White's face is on the he signs every dashboard and his face is on the steering wheel.
I don't know. That's it. It's just Octa. That's the thing. We talked a lot about like performance vehicles and luxury vehicles. So that's all I've got from you from New York right now. There were a couple of like new Hyundais that showed up. But well,
I have some things I'd like to talk about.
Yeah, I think we have some listener comments and questions to discuss, right?
Yeah, so Tim wrote it to us, and he is currently trying to make a car buying decision, and he's in a bit of a tough spot because the two vehicles he's looking at are the 2021 Volkswagen Arteon or the 2022 Kia K5 GT.
The GT, not the GT line.
GT.
Cool.
So the criteria are, Tim likes that the fact that the Arteon has a nice interior, has all-wheel drive, and it's a hatchback. And that last point I think is really important because there aren't really any hatchbacks of that size other than the Arteon and I think the Kia Stinger, which is a vehicle he's looked at, but they're really expensive used. And I've looked at them too, and I agree. And that's even with like the 2.5 liter turbo, not even thinking about the twin turbo V6. Mm-hmm. So he likes those things about the Arteon. What he likes about the Kia is that it doesn't require premium fuel, and the Arteon does, and he's a little bit on the fence because of that. Sammy,
okay.
As far as I know, in the Arteon, if you use regular gas, you just get less performance from the engine. It's the same turbo 4 found in pretty much every Volkswagen with different states of tune, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's that EA 888, I think.
Yeah. So the reason Tim asks why it requires premium and if it's going to be dangerous to run regular octane gas, it won't be dangerous, but it will probably not be as enjoyable a driving experience because you'll lose out on some torque and a little bit of top end horsepower. And the other thing to consider is on very hot days, or if you have a very loaded car, like a lot of people in it, plus cargo, you might get some detonation. The car computer
pinging, essentially.
Yeah, you'll hear like a pinging from the engine. The car's computer is going to dial back the timing as much as it can when it's under heavy load. And at some point, it's not going to be able to go any farther back. And the amount of power is the amount of power you have. And if you're going up a hill or something, you might notice some pinging. So that would be the one area where you probably... And that's a real outlier case. Like, that's going to be a very specific situation. I think you should run premium in the car if it's tuned for premium, just for the best overall experience. But in terms of the other vehicle you're looking at, the Kia K5, it doesn't have all-wheel drive, but it does have a pretty nice interior. And I
it's
think
got
it's
a pretty powerful motor.
Yeah, it's more powerful than the Arteon, right? The Arteon's 268 horsepower.
Yeah, and this one has 290 and like 311 pound-feet of torque. It's a very good engine.
I don't remember how much it's 280 pound-feet in the Arteon, I think. That's usually what those 2 liters are rated at. I drove the Arteon back when it first came out, 2019 or 2020, whichever the model year was. I believe the calendar year was 2019. I don't remember the fuel mileage, Tim. I know you were asking about that. I looked it up. It's 20 miles per gallon city, 27 highway. The reason I don't have it in my notes is because I drove it at the launch event, which is you can't really track fuel mileage because you're switching in and out of different cars and the environment is not what I would call real world because of the roads they put you on. I liked the car. It was comfortable. It's good looking. There are not very many of them. You do not see them everywhere you go. And those are all things in its favor. Versus the Kia, though, the Kia is going to give you fewer hassles, I would say, in terms of reliability.
I don't believe that, man. I think
you don't think a Kia is more reliable than a Volkswagen. Here we go.
Actually, I really do think that a Volkswagen has a bit more a bit more reliability in its favor over some Kias, especially the higher performance ones. I've been hearing a lot of issues about powertrains in Kias and Hyundai products.
But if we're looking at things that are surrounding the powertrain.
Yeah.
Like the electrical systems, software, that kind of stuff. I would probably say the Kia will be less of a hassle.
I've heard that the powertrains in these Kias are problematic. I was going to agree with you on this Kia K5, but I remember the dual
clutch. I'm not recommending it over.
The dual clutch transmission in a Volkswagen, that DSG, is so good. That powertrain is such a great match for each other. And I think that the styling, exterior styling and interior styling of the vehicle also comes together really nicely. And I think that's a pretty good fit.
Look, the other thing about the Arteon
is just like, you're right. Long-term reliability here is tough.
It's a huge upgrade over the Passat, which is what the Arteon replaced.
Mm-hmm.
The Passat was like the Volkswagen Impala. It was like a really odd car for the market. I don't know how many of them they actually sold back in Europe because it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And then the Arteon came out and it was right-sized. And like you point out, the hatchback practicality, which you're not going to find pretty much anywhere else for a reasonable price. I think, you know, you'd be looking at something like a 4-series Grand Coupe, and that's going to be smaller and more expensive and probably have the same type of reliability concerns. So, Tim, I know that this is not a clear-cut decision on our side. I like the Arteon. Sammy likes the Arteon. I'd say you probably like it because you've driven it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Kia is, I think, maybe the safe choice, but you need to buy the car that you want.
Yeah, that's fair.
You need to buy the one that's going to make you smile and the one that's going to fit your needs. And like just the hatchback and all-wheel drive requirements alone, you're not going to find those with the Kia K5.
Yeah, that's fair. You also got some messages regarding last week's conversation we had. Somebody was asking about Teslas, and we described a couple of issues that we've heard about repairs and times. Yeah.
Vyacheslav reached out over Instagram to let me know that they had a really bad experience with Tesla after an accident that they had. They were rear-ended by an F-150, and the vehicle that the Tesla they were driving, basically it broke the rear bumper bar and it did a lot of cosmetic damage, but everything was functional. The only thing that wasn't working was the hatch and the backup camera. So they went to Tesla to get it fixed. This is out on the West Coast in Canada. And Tesla was like a huge waiting list for replies, for parts and repairs, something like 6 months, which is intense. Not only that, they told him it would be 1 month before he could get an estimate on the repair period.
Oh my God.
So, I mean, that's 1 month where you don't have your car or you're driving a car where you don't know if it's safe, you know, and they ended up going to, I believe, a Mercedes-Benz dealer to have the body damage evaluated. They got an estimate there, $32,000 to repair the car.
What? Excuse me? How much is the car? Holy.
So the car brand new was $74,000. The value of the car, according to the insurance company, I think was $56,000 at this point because it had miles and it's not new anymore. And the insurance board where he lives, they totaled the car. And the crazy thing is, from looking at it, it really, the body shop said, look, the real problem with this is the back quarter panel had a crease in it, basically. And there was no way to fix the crease. They wouldn't hammer it out. They said they had to cut the metal and replace the whole panel. And that's the point where the insurance company was like, that's way too expensive. We're writing you a check.
Jeez.
In any case,
that's once so wild.
It was, they gave him a Kia Soul as a loaner. Now, nothing against Kia Soul. I like the car. My father actually has an old Soul now that he uses as his beater.
Mm-hmm.
He likes it too. But if you're going from a Tesla to a Kia Soul, that's not a great experience while you're waiting for your car to be repaired. And all of this taken together, how he was treated by Tesla, the cost, the huge cost associated with just something like body repair. Keep in mind, there was no damage to the battery or anything. You know, this is strictly body damage. He is now no longer driving a Tesla. He took that check. He went straight to BMW and bought a 2020 X3. And so far, the experience overall of the car is just much higher quality than the Tesla. He likes the interior way better. The only real difference he's noticed is that the infotainment system in the BMW is a little bit slower than the one he had in the electric car. Mm-hmm. But the quality, in his opinion, of the Tesla was terrible. And after the accident, it just didn't feel solid anymore. So much happier to be in a BMW. He also was telling me about a problem he had where before the accident, the car had vegan door leather in the Tesla. Sorry. And it was starting to wrinkle, like extremely. And he went to try and get a repair under warranty for this. And they said, no, it's because you're using hand cream and that's what's causing the wrinkles. And so he investigated.
Cream on the car?
Just on your body. Just what on your heck? Body, Sammy.
Why would they be giving you such a hard time about that?
He investigated online and found that there were a lot of other owners who were having similar problems with the leather on the headrests of their vehicles. So once their hair would touch the headrest, it would cause it to wrinkle. And Tesla's whole thing was, we're not going to replace it. You're on your own. And he tried to fix it like with a hairdryer and all sorts of stuff. And it was just too far gone. So, brutal. You know, going from that to the BMW was a real eye-opener just in terms of build quality and design. So thank you, Vyacheslav, so much for sending me all that info. It was a great story to listen to. I mean, great story. It was a well-told story about a terrible experience. I'm happy that you weren't hurt in the accident. I'm happy that Tesla at least did its job and kept you safe, because I saw the picture of the truck that hit you, and it was serious business. But I'm also glad that you're in a vehicle that is more for your money and better represents what you want out of a vehicle.
That's great to hear from our, I mean, it's an awful experience to have both the accident.
And, I would be so frustrated. I would lose my mind.
Yeah. That's not something you can be patient through. If you have experiences that you want to share with us and think that they were wild or worth talking about, feel free to send us an email or a message on our website. Go to unnamedautomotivepodcast.com. There's a contact button there. You fill that out and it lands in our inbox. And then we bring it up on the next episode or whenever we get the chance to. If you want to email us the old-fashioned way, the email address is benjamin@benjaminhunting.com. Or you can reach out to us on social media. You can find Ben on the filter-filled world of Instagram. He's @huntingbenjamin. Or you can find me on Twitter or X, as it's known now. I'm @Sammy_ha, like you're laughing.
And if you want to subscribe to us, if you want to find out what our past episodes are like, if you want to, leave us a review or a comment or something like that on one of your podcatchers, you can find us pretty much on any podcast service, Unnamed Automotive Podcast. Just search us there. Or once again, unnamedautomotivepodcast.com. You can find a list of every single one of our podcasts that we've ever published, including the really early ones where we had a few more links and more photos about the cars that we're talking about. So that's generally the best way to kind of round everything up together. Sammy, are you going to have a car to drive next week and talk about, or am I going to have to drive two cars?
I don't think I have one next week. I might.
The pressure is mounting.
I can't remember now.
I'm going to be talking about the Chevy Trax that I mentioned earlier, and I'm excited because, spoiler alert, maybe no spoilers. Maybe we'll just talk about it next week.
I think that's enough of a spoiler alert. Very cool. I can't wait to talk to you about it next week. And I'm sure so can our listeners are looking forward to it as well.
All right. Bye, everybody.
See ya.